What if your customers, not investors, funded your SaaS journey? In this episode of Artists on Air, I sit down with Richis Laures, co-founder and CEO of Omnisend, a marketing automation platform serving more than 150,000 customers globally and generating more than $55 million in ARR. Richis shares why Omnisend choose to stay customer-funded, what it means to operate without long-term contracts, and how the company scaled by embedding customer centricity into every department of the company. We discuss how Omnisend avoided the data-only trap, how AI is transforming their internal operations and product roadmap, and why Richis believes distribution is shifting from Google to LLMs. It's an episode about discipline, mindset, and building SaaS resilience without the safety net of VC money. Stay tuned and enjoy it with Richis Laures and myself, Julius Göllner. Let's go.
Artist on Air, der SaaS-Podcast für den deutschsprachigen Raum. Wertvolle Tipps von erfolgreichen Gründern, Top-Investoren und führenden Industriepartnern, die euch bei der Skalierung eures Unternehmens schnell und unkompliziert weiterhelfen. Zusammengestellt von Janis Bandorski, Julius Göllner und Matthias Ernst.
Good afternoon, Richis. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for inviting. Really great pleasure to be here.
Great pleasure having you. I think you're the first guest from Lithuania, so it's a premiere for us, a premiere for me. I had the pleasure meeting you in Romania a couple of weeks ago, so it's a very international podcast episode we're recording today.
Absolutely, and you do it in English, so that's all also great for a more international audience. I know that you have a German version as well. So thanks for inviting. Really great to be first Lithuanian in your show.
And I have to say, one with a very, very successful, interesting, and insightful story, Omnisend, we will talk about. We focus on customer centricity today, but I think before we start into this, maybe you can give us a short insight. What is Omnisend doing, Richis, and who are your customers?
Yeah, so we are a marketing automation platform. So basically, as simplify explanation, I know that your audience is capable to understand. So we are SaaS business, but like for those who are not in our field, I usually explain. Look, if you have online store, you attract your customers, you pay for Meta, you pay for Google, and you lose money usually for first transaction, for first purchase of a customer. You need to retain those customers. There is no better channel to retain customers than email. Now it's SMS, web push notifications. So we basically help online those online stores to communicate with their existing customer base in order to invite them to come back and purchase again and again and again and to make profit. So yeah, and the channels we currently cover is email, SMS, and web push notifications. And of course, we help to automate a lot of this communication. You can still do like newsletters, which are still very effective, but the better is automation. So you set up once and you sleep and Omnisend does the job for you driving sales.
We will talk in a bit about the start of this idea and the difficult first steps, but maybe you can give us some insights about where are you now, because it's quite an impressive size of a company already.
Thank you.
So Omnisend 2025, how big is it? Like which markets are you serving? Give us a couple of insights, please.
Yeah, so currently we are like the size 250 employees, full-time employees, more than $55 million in annual recurring revenue. And more than 150,000 customers worldwide. And main markets are United States, followed by the UK, Australia, and mainly English-speaking countries, others as well, Canada, etc. But like, you know, 140 or something countries globally where we have at least one customer from. So sometimes it's little. Okay, we don't have North Korea. We don't have potential Iran, etc. Some countries like that, but the rest, yeah, it's pretty worldwide spread. But yeah, mainly focused towards United States, the UK.
You need to say this now. I can understand it too. So who are your, how would you say are your main competitors in this field, and what's the main differentiating factor you see compared to them?
Yeah, so once we started, that was MailChimp. Now it's Klaviyo. Klaviyo, Klaviyo, for sure. So they're bigger than us, but we're targeting exactly the same audience. I would say, okay, we are targeting mid-size to small businesses. We are targeting mid-size to enterprise. So we're not willing to go enterprise, and then this is our sweet spot. So, but we're strengthening our positioning in the mid-size. When we talk mid-size, we say, like, you know, doing 1 million to, we have kind of threshold for us, like up to 70, sometimes up to 100 million in GMV. So this is our sweet spot customers whom we really create a lot of value. And then they still don't need enterprise level solutions, paperwork, legal stuff, and et cetera, et cetera. So basically where we put the threshold is mainly somewhere than someone hires data analyst for their marketing needs. So we are not willing to serve those kind of customers anymore. This is already other solutions are in the market. And all the way from the very beginning, if you're just launching your online stores as a side hobby, Omnisend is here to help you with a free plan. But truly, ICP is mid-size established e-commerce stores, e-commerce brand that were not not super new to the market, but already established and good businesses, and maybe stable, maybe growing for already 10 years, and will remain doing for upcoming 50 years.
And you mentioned already, Richard, like e-commerce is probably the primary vertical you're operating in. Are there other verticals you're taking a look on, or who work in a similar systematic, or is it really the one and only focus vertical?
Yeah, so e-commerce, that's probably the single thing that has not changed since the inception of Omnisend. So as we started more than 10 years ago already, and we said, okay, this is our differentiator to the generic ESPs. The market was dominated by MailChimp, Constant Contact back in the days, and there were like generic email service providers serving any kind of customers. They are great tools, and I believe if you are a school, a church, or offline business, so they are great tools you should be using. But if you are selling online, so tools like Omnisend is definitely what you need. So our focus on e-commerce has not changed. I would say just the definition of what e-commerce is, or like online commerce, has been broadened. So if 10 years ago that was mainly like selling physical goods, so now there are digital goods tickets, event tickets, train tickets, or even kind of bookings, let's say book an appointment to a doctor or to a hairdresser. So now there are platforms where usually people book online, they even pay online, they find online, they book online, they pay online. So instead of just receiving a parcel, they go to, let's say, to a barber, as an example. So this is the only, and after that, the experience gets back online as well. The salon sends the satisfaction survey, asks to evaluate, to leave five or two or whatever stars review. Of course, everyone expects 5-star reviews, etc. So basically, the everything is kind of all the components are very similar to selling physical goods. So yeah, so. So so maybe a little bit broad answer, but I would say, yeah. So we stick to, let's say, e-commerce and online retail, but the definition of what is that is being broadened in the recent years.
The most impressive thing of the whole story, I think, is that you're still a bootstrapped company, or you're bootstrapped for most of the way. So up to 55 million euros in ARR, which I think is a very impressive entrepreneurial journey. And it's like difficult to find, I guess. Nevertheless, it needs to be mentioned that this was not the plan always and from the beginning. So as I'm informed, right, there was a fundraising master plan, and you also went out to the market to get money. Let us participate in the initial journey, please.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, you're well informed. So initially, look, so you start a startup. Of course, what you do, you go fundraise because this is a playbook, and you wanna, because Omnisend was a pivot from digital marketing agency. So that's how I met my co-founder. He was actually the customer of that agency. So this is how we met, and we start thinking about, okay, not just going for lunch and beer, etc., and talking business. And we understood that, okay, there are some things that unite us, and we want to work together and build a product. So basically, what happened then that we went fundraising, yeah, but you know, like funds at that point looked at us like, "What you gonna do? What email?" Come on. I felt like I was pitching a leather shoes, you know, and I'm presenting, "Oh, this is going to be innovation. We're going to produce leather shoes," you know, and everybody said like, "Come on, email is done deal. There is MailChimp, there is Constant Contact, other great providers in the market. Nobody needs email. There is no innovation, space for innovation." Even more, that was kind of a big trend of conversational commerce at that time. And like chatbots, and people will not be buying, email is dying, etc. But email is dying for the past 30 years or something, but still remain by far the most effective retention channel, at least for those who sell online. So yeah, so that was kind of a reason that, you know, nobody looked, no institutional investors looked seriously at us. So that's kind of forced us to try to do another way. And okay, so we raised a small round from business angels, so no institutional investors, but that was in the form of convertible bonds, and we became profitable soon enough to be able to buy those investors out mainly. So that's a part. Yeah, so for full transparency, there was a small round, but no institutional investors, no boards, and now like all the votes basically are in the hands of two co-founders.
That was what I a little bit wanted to describe, a little bit in between the lines. So there was a very small injection of capital, but no institutional money. So like with this experience, Richard, like how did like this fundraising go the wrong way influenced you as a founder these days? And how did it change your mindset in terms of attributing capital you have?
Yeah, so that changed a lot. And, you know, we felt in love with this model. So basically, as bootstrapped, so this is the kind of a formal term, as we're being called, companies like ours, no external funding. But what we prefer calling ourselves, it's being customer funded. So basically, because our customers, they prepay for 1 month. So they pay in advance, but only 1 month. We barely have any like long-term prepayments or something like this. No.
Still today, yeah? Still today, just like...
Yeah, still today, yeah. It's a part of our DNA. And yeah, so we have very few like contract-based customers. The rest basically can churn at any point. So we basically evaluate if we believe that Omnisend is going to create value for their businesses in upcoming 30 days. If they do believe, they pay us upfront for 30 days. And we have to be very creative, frugal at some points. And creative, and you know, find the ways to use those resources in the best possible way. So, and I, to be honest, I felt in love in this modus operandi, like in the way to operate, because I believe it really unleashes your creativity. You know, just not burning, not buying a lot of expensive ads, but how to build a product, how to go to market, etc.
So the term capital efficiency, which was in everyone's mouth the last 2 years, were in your head already 10 years ago.
Correct. So it's, look, so the last 2 years, the last 3 years were just super easy for us because when everybody kind of had down rounds and massive layoffs, etc., that it instantly became a benefit for us, as at least for the existing team. We said, look, so, you know, we are customer funded, so we're not burning cash. We're profitable for many years. So we have some reserves, and you know, at least if we're not growing, we are not planning to lay anyone off, etc. And yeah, and headcount didn't go like crazy, but still increased in the past years. And no need for layoffs, no need for any kind of drastic cuts that would make an influence on you know, our employees' well-being and satisfaction, etc.
Would you say that your funding structure, which is bootstrapped, seedstrapped, make the way of only 1 month cancellation periods possible at all? Because I can imagine if you're institutional VC funded, everyone would by heart push you as a founder to do, of course, long-term contracts 6-12 months in advance. Sure. So it would be almost impossible to run a model like you're doing it right now.
Potentially. It probably depends. And I would say probably, at least for what I see, and again, I don't have like personal experience. I failed twice with startups, two startup attempts prior to Omniscient. So one of the startups was as well bootstrapped, another was funded. So I believe like earlier you accept the investor's money, the more push in general you have. Because I believe those who are kind of bootstrapping to a certain point, and look, so sometimes people ask me, so are you against like VCs or PE money, etc.? I see, maybe I'm not like totally against, but my advice still would be that, you know, try to bootstrap as long as you can. And there are some startups and there are businesses that they are super capital intense, and it's not easy or not even feasible to bootstrap, especially if you're on a hardware, let's say, business, etc. So just not possible to do in the way we did and we still continue doing. So I think it's kind of the level of push depending on two components. How early did you take the investors? The earlier you did, the more push you get. And then the second, how good are you? How well are you doing? So basically, at least to what I see in the market again. So if you're doing well, so investors are more passive, you're doing somewhere in between, then you get a lot of push. And of course, if you're doing very bad, so we don't care anymore as well.
Running, as you call it, which is a customer-funded business model, means, of course, putting the customer really in the center of everything. So customer centricity, I think, is within your DNA. And I love to go into this in a short minute. Before we do this, to get to know you better, and probably also for our listeners to get to know you better, because you're someone which is not super present in the DACH ecosystem so far. It's not your focus, your single focus, as we heard, with like more than 120 countries. I'd like to fire a couple of rapid questions to you. It's a very easy round. I will start a sentence and you answer them just by gut feeling, which comes up to your mind first. Nothing too crazy, but I think we will get a little bit more background about yourself, your thinking, and what drives you. Are you open for a fast and quick round of rapid fire?
Let's do it. Sounds intriguing.
Perfect. So when I need to clear my head, I usually
spend time alone.
Okay. What are you doing alone then, Richard?
Reading, cycling, boat.
Okay.
I go with my boat. Yeah.
Sounds nice. After exiting Omniscient, I'd probably...
Whew, that's a good question. I continue. At least at my age, I would do something else.
So you will build the next company,
It's like potentially. Or there is a big like area of my hobby now. It's I'm quite actively involved in some NGOs which are education related.
Okay.
So this is not a like ed tech or business ideas, but like more just, you know, giving back to society. So maybe I would spend all my time in educational things.
The one SaaS metric I'm secretly obsessed over is
ARR, MRR.
not a surprise, yeah? Not a surprise here.
Okay, maybe it's, no, it's a wrong answer. I'm publicly obsessed.
All right, okay. Tell me why.
I go to, I know, it's, let's say, situation. I'm in the bar with my friends, you know, and I still open the dashboards. I check, you know, it's 11 a.m., but check, okay, how MRI is doing.
So your friends know you for being obsessed here.
Huh? Oh, yeah. Even okay. My personal friends, not who are like work friends.
My worst habit as a leader is probably...
That is a difficult question. Okay, know what was my worst habit was for quite many years. Maybe it's easier to retrospectively look at you. So, inability to properly delegate.
Okay. How did you overcome it?
I think that, yes, I will see how I will look at this after another 5 years, maybe not. But this is the biggest challenge as I had as a manager and as a leader to properly delegate and not to be a bottleneck and to fully trust people and just give all the freedom to do what they do better than I do, actually.
Perfect. The last two, what's this? The Lithuanian tech ecosystem is?
Oh, hot and vibrant and growing. In the past, like 5-7 years, I think there is so many great companies that already there are unicorns, there are early stage startups. So having in size, having in mind the size of Lithuania was a bit less than 3 million in total population. So we have so many hot, great startups. Yeah, and a lot of bootstrapped companies. Some of them managed to bootstrap to unicorns even.
So crazy success stories indeed. Also like have been in the Baltics a couple of times over the last year. It's really impressive. As you say, like if you take the size of the market and the size of the countries compared to what's happening, very, very impressive, but maybe also like a big advantage that it's a like more condensed ecosystem where people meet more easier. The structures are more like condensed than we have here in Germany, where it's very long tail oriented, many cities, many universities. So it could be a big advantage, right?
True. So big advantage is ecosystem. So really, I think it's like relationship is very friendly among founders, among people. Yeah, we compete for some talent, for the same talent to some extent, but at the same time, there is more cooperation than competition, which is really great. So this attitude is first thing. The second thing I think is just because there is no way as like opposite to German market, those who have a startup ambition, we instantly think about the global market. So if you start in Germany, highly likely you start company in Germany and then you think about the expansion because German market or DACH market is big by itself. So sometimes it's just easier to start global straight away. And if you succeed, you just succeed in a way bigger market.
Absolutely agree. I think it's similar to Israel, for example.
Yeah, good example.
Where you really, really have a global mindset, first of all. Yeah. Last question, which brings us probably back to the main topic, which is, to me, customer centricity means?
Oh, you know, always listening to customers and then building what we need and actually serving and creating value for them. So, because if, creating value for customers constantly, every day.
This is a very good one. So the question is like, how did you do this at the beginning? I think like you started with an agency, so you were close to your customers in general, but like from there building the first version of a product, VC said no. So like, how really did you do this? Listening to your customers, interacting with your customers, and maybe also like follow on question, how do you do it today?
Imagine this. It's October the 8th in Berlin, the evening before the artist conference. And instead of just heading quietly back to your hotel, you've got the chance to kick things off with a really powerful evening. Free of charge at HubSpot's office in Berlin with drinks, networking, and real insights on AI and automation in marketing. On stage, you won't find theorists, but true practitioners. Ben Harmonis from HubSpot, Maren Kaspers from Autonomy AI, and Robin Heinze, our partner from Morefire. They will show you how to use AI in marketing in a truly meaningful way. And the best part, you can connect directly with some of the sharpest minds in the industry. Seats are limited, so don't wait too long. Register now for free at more-fire.com/ARR. In my view, it's a perfect preparation and complement to the Artist Summit, but you're welcome to join even if you're not attending the Artist Conference. And now let's continue with the pod.
So, that was a journey. So initially, I would say while you are small and just launching and founders are actively involved in everything, so just, you know, talk to our customers, no better, just answer support tickets. Talk to our customers. And then this is the best way to listen. Where it has a challenge, a big, big challenge, is because you have so many requests, so many asks, because, like, you know, so some time ago, like some colleagues found early designs of Omnisend product. It looks so premature. I don't know why anyone at all paid for it, you know, but probably that's what sets the stage. Yeah, if you're just launching, you build MVP, you build a very first version of a product, it will be premature. But if still there are customers who need it, that kind of sets the stage and it shows that there is a need for such service. And once you improve, I mean, maybe churn is high at the beginning, etc. But so, yeah, so just talking, but at the same time, it comes with a big, big challenge to filter out what we will do and what we will not do, because the resources are like, you know, fraction to what you hear from customers. You can fulfill 10% of the asks, and 90% you have to say no. So this is the big challenge. To the second part, that how we do now, so maybe I will just have an like in between stage, which I think that was a trap. So maybe it's worth it will be interesting for the listeners to learn this. And at some point when we start growing, and of course myself, we just kind of like, you know, we started having a distance from our customers. Mm-hmm. Okay. And we just became data-driven organization. Just too much data driven, I would say, and we kind of hide ourselves. And don't get me wrong, being data driven is very important, or like data assisted. That's how we prefer calling now. So, but looking at the dashboards does not show the full story. And there was a stage when we start kind of like the churn started decreasing, etc., and we start like analyzing what happened. And basically, that's a revelation. We understood that, yeah, we have hidden ourselves behind the dashboards. And let's see, basic example. Oh, this feature is not needed. Nobody's using it. We can maybe discontinue it, etc. Yeah, we see numbers. It's data-driven decision. But when you talk to the customers, you see that, okay, this is the feature which is very needed, but the way we implement it is just absolutely shitty way. You know? And that's the reason why nobody's using, and people finding third-party solutions to making some workarounds, and that is the reason. And then you start analyzing, okay. So anecdotally, we have different evidences. And then when you combine it, and you start improving it, you see that numbers start going up. And the real reason, and you just had a misleading picture from it only. So probably kind of this is kind of a big learning that we learned in our way, that you should never become data-only driven organization. Data-assisted, yes, but it has to be in combination with real conversations with customers. So we maybe will touch a bit how we do about this data collection, etc., and what data points we analyze. But like there are dashboards, but on top of it there are live conversations, and all C-suite, all PMs, all designers. There's a big list of employees by roles for whom it's mandatory to have customer meetings. Mm-hmm. And in order just to better understand how we've live, what challenges do they have, what wording do they use, how do they use our product, what are they happy, what are they not, etc. And myself, I have a quota of at least 4 customer meetings per month, so once per week. And this is our public dashboards. It's being reported. Sometimes I only do 3, sometimes I only do 2, and everybody sees that readers is in the red zone. So
okay, but let me make this clear. So nowadays at OmniSend, there is a predefined number of roles and people who need to do client interactions. Yes. And these client interactions are supervised, they are controlled, and there is a dashboard who makes it completely transparent who did their client meetings and who didn't.
Correct, yeah. And this is roles outside, like account manager, support, for whom it's like by design they do. But we're talking about like marketing people, about product people, designers, all the C-suite, all the CFO has to do at least 2 customer interviews per month.
That's super interesting. And I mean, taking myself into the shoes of customers, I think it's a brilliant and smart approach. But how do you emphasize this conversation? So like, why you write your customers or maybe prospects as a, let's say, as a C-suite for tech? Yeah? Like, say, hey, guys, I want to talk about what? So please give me a half an hour of your time because I need to report it to my MD. Or like, of course, I'm joking here, but like, I mean, how do you trigger these conversations on a constant basis?
So there are various instruments. So there is a lady who's responsible for these customer interviews. She's working customer experience department. So basically she arranges, and this is okay, not full-time job, but one of the responsibilities. So there are customers whom we incentivize and we just invite to those conversations. And look, we have 150,000 customers. So it's quite a big pool. Yeah. So if of course, if you would have, I don't know, 1,000 customers, it would be more difficult to have that number of different conversations each month, because this is quite a lot of those conversations. So this is kind of just, yeah, some customers, we just come for Amazon voucher. Some customers come from account managers. We call it customer success managers. Yeah. So sometimes we join and I join the meetings, which are already kind of cadence meetings with our CSM. And CSM just asks, okay, are you okay if my colleague would join a conversation? And usually we don't even kind of introduce initially, especially kind of, you know, CEOs joining or what's happening here, etc. So once I'm ready in the call, I do introduce myself who I am, but then there is no kind of this stress prior to that, you know. Yeah. It's just a colleague from whatever product to better understand your needs, etc. So yeah, and we talk about business, yeah, and it's usually some to understand the broader context, you know. So how are we doing? How about email retention, marketing in general, business in general, etc. The people who are coming to those interviews are very, very different. Sometimes those just individual contributors who do email copywriting, let's say, in some cases. Sometimes those are CEOs of maybe smaller companies. Sometimes people are like praising you. So we usually do half an hour. So sometimes people are praising you. Sometimes there are people like criticizing you for that 30 minutes. Sometimes they find a great opportunity to bargain the better deal and ask for discount.
Live negotiations with the CEO, one-time opportunity.
exactly. No, but that's the beauty of it. So basically, that's how you really feel the customers, how different they are, how different their needs, and what is like those common needs, yeah? Because and then you start like after multiple conversations, you start seeing your own trends and wording and you know, emotions.
I have a follow-up question here. So first question is like, okay, how do you prepare this meeting? So what's your goal for these meetings of this participants from your side? Yeah, because as you said, sometimes you're speaking to the user of your software, maybe sometimes to the economic buyer, maybe sometimes mm-hmm. even with the founder, who give you a broader picture. So very different personas, very different use cases. What's the target? What's the goal of these conversations for your team?
To better understand the customer. So it's pretty soft, yeah. So there are no hard targets. So you don't do any, there are no KPIs. We don't do any upsells. So just to spend the time and to talk. Like pretty open targets. But just, yeah. So the main target is basically to be in active conversation with a customer and active listening. Yeah? So probably in this case, we try to listen more of our customers. No, it's not like to present the features or capabilities of our customer to our customers. Not, it's just, you know, to spend the time with them. And like, there is a lot of magic when it happens.
I can imagine there's a lot of value mm-hmm. which is probably coming out of these conversations, especially if you design the questions and conversations more in active listening, open-ended questions. Mm-hmm. So what do you do with this massive volume of unstructured data mm-hmm. in these cases?
Yeah, so probably kind of we touched this, which is, this is kind of this invisible layer, which we don't do much with the data that we extract from those conversations. And there is a data layer, which, as I said at the beginning, still remains very important, and you have to combine both. So basically, when we talk about the data layer, so we have a lot of touch points that we have our customers. We have support tickets, we have all the customer success managers conversations being recorded. We now with AI just became way easier than it was in the past. So basically, we transcribe all those conversations. We analyze them. So we have prospects. So the data is coming from our CRM. What are the needs of our prospects? What do they ask for? Maybe there is some kind of lack of features, etc. Maybe it's there are gaps with competition. Maybe there are some new things that just arise. Let's say with AI, there are some new ideas our customers are coming from. So there's a lot of data. Then we put a filter because, you know, we have small customers, free customers, ICP, which is the ideal customers, which I said like ideal customer is mid-sized customer. We still serve small customers. We don't serve enterprise. So basically we filter out only those who are the most ideal customers.
Core.
The most ICP customers, because there is still a lot of noise because there are, you know, thousands and thousands of data points, etc. And basically you distill those. So okay, what are the feature requests are coming? What are complaints? And then we analyze those. Are those feature requests? Are those bugs? Are those some kind of UX, because, you know, sometimes people just ask for something or complain if we talk about like product improvements, but this is actually the UX that you have this capability. It was just not 100% clear how to implement it for customers, etc. So basically the feature is there, but just UX is not as good to help our customers to self-serve. That's why we need to reach out to support, to CSMs, etc. Yeah, so to combining all those and then basically pulling into one analytical tool. Yeah, so again, with AI, it just became way easier. Before that, there were long Excel sheets. And even now, we have like full-time employees who do only this, basically analyze our customer needs and provide with insights, with dashboards, our product teams, our designers, etc.
So for me, sounds like you use these interviews combined with the data from user behavior tickets, of course, to make your product better and to improve in the whole experience for your customer. But also sounds like you use it as a kind of educational tool to really educate all of your employees and to put them into your customer's shoes. So sounds like it's something which is really deep in your DNA. So how deep is it in the DNA, not only of your head, how deep is it in the organization at all? And like, what other things do you do to really have centricity at the core of everything at Omnisend?
So I would say, so I hope it's, and I hope, and then always trying to deepen it. So, you know, so starting with values and culture. Yeah, so I strongly believe that values and the culture organization is like fundamental of everything. And if you set it right in your way, and each organization can have completely different, there are just kind of different kind of people who then are happy to join and work for many years in different organizations. So so we have like five main principles as our main values. And we really work hard to those values to be alive. They are being set by top management, not by PR or HR team. And they are living. They are really living, and we work hard to really set them and to make them work. So the first one is customer centricity.
What a surprise.
Yeah, then we talk about speed, we talk about team play, which is more internal things. Yeah, we talk about transparency, which again, it's more internal, but customer centricity is both external and internal. So a lot of things that we are setting is kind of, yeah, starting from there, yeah, setting that customer centricity is important. So those interviews, meetings, and we kind of like, you know, it's all these questions. Okay, so whatever we're going to do next, so what value is it creating for customers? It's kind of like, you know, just setting this one.
Just thinking aloud, you already mentioned, of course, with AI, a lot of this research and big data analytics became way more easy.
Correct.
Of course, completely underlined.
Correct.
I ask myself, and I know you're doing a lot of stuff already with AI for yourself and for your customers. I'm really intrigued, like, okay, how much of AI is buzz right now and like really too much on media and on LinkedIn, and how much is really implemented into use cases and own products. So maybe I'd like to take the last 10 minutes to talk about a little bit, okay, where else than data analytics are you really using AI for yourself, and where do you really provide it to customers? And it's also the adoption is already quite high there. So yeah, very curious.
Perfect. Yeah. So I would say, and then I think you distinguished it right. So there are two areas. So how you apply AI inside organization, and what AI capabilities do you bring to your customers, as us being a SaaS product. So of course we bring those capabilities. So, and there are two, because, you know, to use AI internally, it's not only product and engineering stuff. So everybody has to use, and you have to transform mindset basically into an AI first mindset. So that's what we're doing across organization, and we have KPIs that related, OKRs that related our internal transformation. We have once per month AI day, that entire day, no other meetings, no pre-scheduled, except of support, but all the other colleagues are invited to basically pause on whatever we do and to simplify or enhance or make it more effective the tasks we already do with AI. So basically just, you know, apply AI to your daily activities, etc. So that's what we do at organization. But I think it's all about transforming the mindset. When you have a task, where you start with? Do you start with your AI companion, or do you start in like an old school way? If you need to brainstorm, potentially you still need a whiteboard. In many cases, you still need, but okay. But you have no inspiration. So do you like wait for inspiration, or you just open ChatGPT or Gemini or whatever, Claude, and, you know, start bouncing ideas back and forth, and then you continue at the whiteboard. So yeah, so this is kind of like a mindset transformation that we are really pushing this year. We waited a little bit. We're not like super, super early adopters. We said, okay, let's wait and see if AI is more at the level of internet, or it's at the level of blockchain. So now I strongly believe that AI is
more on the internet side.
More than internet. It's a level of steam machine or electricity. It's a fucking disruptive technology, and it will change how humans live.
No question.
A lot. So it's there to stay, and it's there to disrupt everything. So you either adapt or you will not be needed in the upcoming 5, 10, 20 years.
This would mean that also customers need to adopt, and also Absolutely. Customers need to use it heavily. The question is, do they really do this, Richard? Yeah, so I got your Correct. Internal perspective, and it's cool that you're doing a lot here, but how much in reality are your customers already using AI functionalities of yourself?
And there is a big challenge. I assume like there are a lot of like more established SaaS businesses we're facing. I assume, to what I talk to others as well. So there are new to the market, which opens a big opportunities for them. But there are two kinds of customers. There is one kind of customers, early adopters, that we insist to have a lot of AI capabilities, and we deliver those, and we actually embedding a lot of AI capabilities. Yeah. So let's say starting with the most challenging to create a segment. It was logical that you have to if then or and etc. So you have to write a formula basically to build a segment. Now it's you can prompt it at Omnisend to build a segment. It's way easier. Yeah, we're launching like with automations now with forms. It's in the beta now, but more and more customers already get access to those functionalities, etc. So it really simplifies a lot. It really saves a lot of time. And we have even kind of outside slogan, AI is taking my job, finally. Yeah, to do this boring stuff that was not loved by our customers. And we're bringing this. Adoption, though, to your point, is not as high as we would like it to have. And there are those early adopters. They're super happy. They use it. They find massive value of it, etc. The rest, still more talk than do. So So still, there are a lot of customers that a bit, maybe a bit more hesitant, or maybe they still kind of use a combination with, okay, use ChatGPT plus Omniscient. Although Omniscient has a lot of capabilities embedded, like, you know, copywriting, it's embedded into our product or subject line, etc. But maybe just more convenient, more routine, and I'm familiar with ChatGPT, so it's easier to write the copy, to prompt it there instead of prompting inside the product. So, yeah, so to your point, so AI is definitely here to stay, and in the product, we have like 2-3 years product strategy, so we are converting the product into AI first. Adoption is still a challenge at this moment, but I have no doubt still after like 2-3 years, you have to be, as a product, AI first, otherwise you will be outdated.
Maybe last question on this, which is, do you think adoption will naturally increase, or do you really counteract on this and like think about new educational formats to really drive adoption within your product as well?
I would say both. I think none of a SaaS standalone or none of a product standalone is capable to re-educate people. But because there will be so many of us re-educating, and in general life will be pushing, and is already pushing to transform the mindset into AI first. So definitely it's just inevitable. Yes, yeah, so we do education, but do we believe that we will re-educate our customers alone? So not, but because of the general environment, what is happening around, the customers will re-educate for sure.
There is a strong thesis from Lenny and Lenny's podcast over the last weeks, which is that OpenAI or at least another LLM will become the primary distribution platform for go-to-market. I probably suggest that email will still exist, as you said, existed the last 20 years and never died. But I mean, how do you, maybe as an ending question, what's your take on this kind of distribution shift which is happening right now, and how does it influence the next 3 years of Omniscient?
So yes and no, I agree and disagree at the same time. So yes, they will be, look, so probably what is or was, still is, the primary distribution channel, it's Google. In general, yeah. Is Google the primary distribution channel for us as a business, for Omniscient as a business? Not. It's important, one of the channels, but not the primary. So LLMs are basically replacing search. So for those for whom Google and search was the primary distribution channel, of course LLMs are replacing. And our SEO team now puts more effort into LLM optimization than to Google old school optimization. Yeah. So this channel still, it plays a role. It's important. So this is definitely like the entire team is shifting. The focus is shifting there. So for those whom Google search was the primary distribution channels, LLM will disrupt everything. For businesses like SaaS, like in our case, it just, 10% of new revenue or something. So the rest still 90%, I believe, will not, agencies will continue doing their work. Like app stores will continue existing, etc. So yeah, review sites, maybe they are challenged being challenged, like G2, Trustpilot, etc. But still, you will have to collect those reviews, and those LLMs rely on someone's data. The biggest challenge that maybe customers will not continue journey to those websites, so they lose traffic, but they do not lose relevancy. So that's a matter of question if they will find new monetization models. So that's how I think about it.
It's very interesting, Regis. And of course, my follow-on questions, which we need to solve then on the next episode, is like, how does your go-to-market look like in detail? Maybe we will find out next time. Maybe if someone is interested, contact Regis directly. I'd like to say thank you here, Regis, for your time. Congrats again to this impressive journey so far. And for me, it was really insightful to understand your mentality about putting the customer really to the center of everything. It's for me sometimes a buzzword. Customer centricity here and there. But I think we got a feeling like how deep you really think it within your organization, within your mindset, and within your whole go-to-market. So thanks a lot for your valuable insights here.
Thank you, Luis, for inviting. Great to talk with a professional, SaaS professional.
Thanks a lot from my side. And of course, we need your help, Regis. We are a traveling SaaS community. The artists are going everywhere, also to Vilnius, which is a beautiful place, I can say from my own experience. And we need a recommendation for great food. So where to go to eat in Vilnius, Regis? Where do you go?
That's a good question, you know, and that, because I only allowed to choose one,
yes,
so
yes,
I have one kind of premium restaurant, which is really, really good. It's Michelin, but maybe, okay, this time, okay, maybe we'll meet next time. So 1918, that's what I would recommend.
Okay.
Yeah.
What kind of kitchen is it? Like, is it, this is the premium one, the Michelin
one? The premium
one. Okay.
Yeah. So let's make it premium. I know the chef and they are Michelin star rated. And but at the same time, it's one of those Michelin star restaurants where you get out after dinner actually feeling happy and not hungry.
Okay.
Not hungry because you consumed enough of food, you know. So, and this is the philosophy of a chef in this restaurant, but you know, people who come to my restaurant should never get outside and go to McDonald's after it.
Yeah, I think it's a good thinking. Probably question of cost of ingredients, but I really like it. 1918, we will put it to the artist website, of course, where you can find all recommendation. Thanks a lot, Regis. I'm looking forward to my next visit to Vilnius and to 1918 together with you. I will spend a glass of great wine and see you hopefully next time, maybe in Berlin.
Perfect, perfect. Thanks for inviting and yeah, welcome to Vilnius.
Thank you, man. Bye-bye.
Bye.
What an inspiring journey from pivoting out of a digital agency to scaling Omnisend into a 55 million ARR customer-funded powerhouse. Thank you, Regis, for sharing so openly about capital efficiency, customer obsession, and the realities of scaling globally. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in today. If you want to meet more SaaS leaders like Regis, join us next week for Berlin SaaS Week in Berlin. And of course, the highlight on Thursday, October the 9th, the Artist Summit. See you there. Until then, stay focused, stay customer first, and enjoy the ride. Bye-bye.